Hello and welcome back to another episode of Biff Pow Bam, where I'm your host, P Dubs, as always. And joining me is Tony.
I've got a bandana. That's just scrambling to find a quote from the first three episodes to use it.
So, yep, as you can tell, if you've watched it, that is, we are here to talk What If Season 2. Because, again, it's only the two of us, we are going to stick to doing multiple episodes in one show. So we're going to talk about the first three here. And I think, really, they're probably the ones that set up the season for what's to come, I would say. This kind of... Certainly the first two, I would say, kind of give you an idea of what is going to be coming. So the third one, not so much. I think the third one's a bit of a throwaway episode. But
yeah, we'll talk about it more in a minute. But it's a fun sort of diversion. I think the other two are much more moody pieces. The first two episodes, aren't they?
Yeah, and they kind of give you an idea as to what's to come. Not so much that we're saying these are going to influence later episodes, but I do feel like they give you more of an idea of what they're going for. Yeah. So we're going to start with the first one, which is what happened. What if Nebula had joined the Nova Corps? Well, let's get it out of the way. There's a few episodes that have come up that are a bit of a, would I say, a celebration of other movies.
Yeah, and there's at least two in this first three.
The
first thing I've written down was Blade Runner. It's as soon as the episode starts.
Yep, that is exactly my note. I said, let's get it out of the way. This is Blade Runner.
Yeah. And then I've written down Sold already.
And it's a great moody opening.
Yeah. Xandar
and kind of
Xandar just looks incredible in that sort of gloom and neon.
Yeah, definitely. And we get an early returning character, which I wasn't expecting, in Peter Serafinowicz.
Yes.
Wasn't expecting him to be in it.
No.
As we've seen, he's kind of walked away from voicing cartoon characters before. So this was quite strange. Obviously, we saw him play Darth Maul in the original Phantom Menace, but then didn't come back for the animated stuff, was replaced... and then apparently did come back to voice Maul in Solo and was replaced by the guy that had replaced him in the animated stuff. So this was very, very strange to see him back in this kind of role. And there is a lot of people that come back in this episode. I'm just going to read them off because I've written them down and it was quite surprising. So you got Karen Gillan, obviously, as Nebula. Jude Law as his character from Captain Marvel, which 10, 15 years ago, there's no way Jude Law would be doing TV, let alone animated TV. So that was quite strange. We get a quick cameo from Michael Rooker as Yondu.
Seth Green. Something like that.
Yeah, literally they repeated the same line about five times and that was it. We've got Seth Green back as Howard the Duck, Taika Waititi back as Korg. And interestingly, not Vin Diesel as Groot.
No.
So for reasons that became clear after it came out. Unfortunately there's some trouble brewing for Vin Diesel in Hollywood at the moment?
Reportedly, yeah. I don't want to dwell on it too much, but yes, I saw the name come up in a story the other day, so yes.
Yeah, so that might be possibly why we have someone else playing Groot. So that was it for returns. Glenn Close also didn't return as the lead Nova, unfortunately, but that's not really a surprise. She tends to be very choosy with what she does, very picky with her contracts. I was saying this, I visited the Disney 100 exhibition in London yesterday, and they had a segment for Cruella de Vil. And there was a few pictures of of her in the film. So it showed all three. It showed the animated, it showed that version, and it showed Emma Stone's. One of Emma Stone's costumes was in there. Glenn Close, you will not find any of her costumes in any exhibition because she owns them all. She had it in her contract that was part of her deal, that she would take the whole wardrobe when they finished. Wow. So you will never see her stuff. So that kind of explains why she's probably not going to be doing animated TV, to be honest. No. Also, you talking about the one-line rocker, and we get a very silent Ronan the Accuser.
Yes.
Doesn't say a word.
Yeah.
So there we go. But jumping into the story and the episode itself, matter what universe Nebula is in, her life is shit.
Yes, basically. Even when it looks like she's landed on her feet in this role.
Yeah.
She ends up used.
Yeah. Not good at all. So I want to say there is definitely a noticeable change in the style of animation in this second season.
Yes. I thought that as well. It looks a little bit more gritty at times, especially in this Andor one.
Yeah.
It put me in mind of something else I've seen in the past. I can't think what the hell it was. There's a scene later on where she's in the sort of running water coming down the side of the building. And the color and the texture of it looks so unlike anything we saw in the first series.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's really interesting. And I'll mention it here because it's not part of these three episodes. It's actually the next set of episodes on. The Tony Stark episode when he lands with the Grandmaster, that was from the previous season and it didn't get finished. You can definitely notice it. If you watch two episodes back to back, including that one, there is definitely a noticeable difference in what they are doing.
They have refined the art of it as well.
Definitely. I just said Yondu getting himself into mischief as always. So that's not a surprise. I kind of wish Karen had got this sort of material in live action, because I still feel like she was very underutilized in the Guardians films.
Yeah,
she actually had more to do in the last Avengers film.
Yes,
than she normally does in the Guardians films, which is a real testament to what James Gunn thought about the character, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, it's no secret we're big fans of Karen on here. I mean, we've both met her, and we both probably raised an eyebrow when her casting was made as Manx, but she just knocked it out of the park.
And I don't think it was even the fact, because we didn't really know the character of Nebula when she got cast. No. To be fair, I don't think many people knew the Guardians full stop.
Yeah, I think it was just we knew her, this sort of energetic Scottish lass that is all giggly and tall and amazing. And then she gives us this measured, gravelly-voiced transatlantic American.
Yeah.
And it's just captivating to listen to and watch her doing it.
Yeah, really is. And the fact that at that point she'd kind of come off of Doctor Who and had a couple of failed projects that hadn't done as well as they probably should have. I'm sure you've seen it. Oculus should have done better than it did.
Yes, a really good film, and should have found a bigger audience.
Yeah, and then obviously she had her own TV series in the States that lasted, I don't think it got more than 5 episodes in the end. And then all of a sudden she was part of the MCU, this massive juggernaut at the time that was coming off the back of the first Avengers movie, and just it was a strange bit of casting in those terms as well. But she's stuck around. She's still going. Excuse me.
And this episode is just rewards, I think, for everything she's put in so far. Get her own episode, effectively.
Yeah, definitely. Then we get the cameos that I don't know whether I'd call them cameos, because there's a couple of moments throughout the episode with them. But I've got to say, I think Taika Waititi should just stick to playing Korg.
Yeah, and also I think, ironically, he's much funnier and more interesting than through the entirety of Love and Blunder.
Yeah, and isn't it weird, because I also feel like Hemsworth is far better in What If than he has been in the last couple of Thor films.
Yeah, well, because it kind of, that slapsticky kind of stuff, it seems to suit the animation better.
Yeah.
Because I said before that I found him live action funnier in the first Thor film than anything else.
Yeah.
Because it was that fish out of water stuff. He was great at it.
Yeah.
When they started to make him a little bit more pie in the face kind of comedy, it, for me, never really worked the same.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And obviously, Thor's not in this one, but he does pop up in the next couple. And I still can't get over that Seth Green manages to produce the voice of Howard the Duck. Because at times it's clearly him, but it's in such a different tone.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's we're talking about sort of range and outside of the normal fight. You compare it to the stuff. I mean, we're Buffy fans and knowing from Oz, and then you get the you go from Oz to Seth to Chris Griffin, in Family Guy,
Then
to this, they're so wildly different, you know.
Yeah, then Scott in Austin Powers. It's just unreal at times. As I said earlier on,
so funny in this. He's just great.
He is, and I really do hope something comes of him playing Howard a bit more. We've obviously had a few live action cameos and things like that, and he's even in the Guardians of the Galaxy ride at Disneyland.
Well, I mean, this is why I was disappointed that there looks like they're going to be acting the one shot. Because for me, the one shots. The whatever they call the special presentation offered more possibilities than six series a year or whatever it is being felt like. And you could do stuff like him, like a one-off with Howard or something like that. And far more interesting than some of the shows that we've had.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. As I said earlier on, I never thought I'd see Jude Law doing animated TV, and he actually puts in a really good performance in this.
Yes. I mean, actually, this is going to cover the first three completely, but I think the thing I noted across the three episodes watching is that everybody seems to have given it a bit more. They're all, even like Seb Stan in the later episode.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that, because there was a few that kind of felt like they were just doing it because they were contracted to.
Yeah.
Whereas this kind of feels like because they've moved on, and a lot of the actors have moved on, and aren't under contract anymore, and they've kind of gone, do you know what? I actually really enjoyed it, and people seem to like it. We're going to come back, and we're going to give you a bit more.
Yes, yeah. Because I thought, oh, is he going to be a bit one note? But no, he's really good. And it's the character from his movie, from the movie. Yeah. It's him. You can hear it. It's that same delivery, and that same quite moody, villainy performance, and it's really good. And I liked it,
Definitely. I did feel like this episode could have been longer, because it kind of moves from one sequence to another. Like, she gets hurt in the fight, and then all of a sudden she's back with this version of the Guardians or the Ravagers quite quickly. We don't really see her struggle with it or anything like that. It just felt like possibly, as well as it's the premiere of the season. It feels like there could have been a little bit more length to it. But
saying that, they do seem to have nailed in this show the art of the half-hour storytelling method compared to some other stuff.
Yeah, compared to the live-action shows where they've kind of gone, oh, do you know what? It could be anywhere between half an hour and an hour. We're not going to worry about that. We're just going to produce what we produce, which in some ways probably sometimes doesn't allow them to do enough.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll probably go into it and they go, oh, it's in between our times. That's enough. And at other times they don't produce enough.
But with this show, they seem to stuck to, well, you know, we've got 25, 26 minutes. This is the story we're going to tell.
Yeah.
At least they're consistent in that respect. And they use inventive sort of dissolves and changes of scenery to get through that.
Yeah, definitely. I did want to say Peter Serafinowicz is even more of a wanker in this than he was in the film.
Yes, he was a bit more brutal as wanker as well.
Yeah, definitely. Then we get Rambo the Duck. as you alluded to at the start of the episode.
Yeah, that's I really like that exchange between those two, and she's
yeah,
style. I've got style. I've got a bandana. I just
yeah,
love.
yeah. Then I did say it was quite nice to see Yondu's arrow in action again, because it came a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
In the last couple of Guardians appearances.
I do love the fact that she inherits his fin.
Yeah.
But I've scribbled down here that the one that I love about this show is that we're going to see a lot more cosplays come out of it now as well. So this is going to be at least two different Novas. There's going to be a Nova version and a Finn version of her knocking around cosplays and stuff
Yeah.
like
Yeah, definitely.
that.
And I quite like this, but this team up, they all work really well together.
Yeah. And again,
Considering the bulk of them are animated anyway in live action, it works quite well.
And again, Taika's line delivery is great there with that. Yeah, we look cool. And it's worth it. It's a quick one-liner and it works. And then he gets a second one straight away when they're sat in the car.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And then my last note, it's for anybody that listens to this that's the theme park fans, the flight sequence when Nova's in the ship and Nebula's trying to grab hold of it. It actually flies over what is basically the outside of the ride at Epcot, which I thought was quite a nice little nod. Wow. But yeah, that was my notes. I got to say, I really enjoyed this episode.
I thought it was a really good opener. The only other visual thing I was going to refer to, I did note down and made me chuckle, was the fact you've got a rock, paper, scissors playing rock, paper, scissors. I thought that was genius.
Yeah, and the fact that he picks paper and then goes, yeah, but it's made of rock, mate. And yes, it's just like, it's just like, brilliant. I love that. And that's what Taika does well.
Yeah.
We know that from his early career. When he's starred in his things,
more of that and less of the screaming goats and the headless and the bodiless Korg, which didn't work for me at all.
Definitely not.
It's irritating.
Yeah,
and this back to the version from Ragnarok a bit more. I thought.
Yeah. So then we move on to the second episode, which is What If Peter Quill Attacked Earth's Mightiest Heroes. So this is an interesting one, because it I don't know how to kind of put it, because it's kind of trying to replicate an Avengers team that honestly isn't great. It's a bit lacking in superpowers at times.
Yes.
Because Peggy and Howard, neither of them have got powers, yet they seem to be out there. And I found that a strange decision, that they built up Captain Carter, and then in this, she isn't. She's just...
The 1980s one that we saw in the first Ant-Man film.
Yeah, which is where this is possibly coming from. So again, we've got loads of cameos in this episode. We've got Michael Douglas, which was a surprise as well.
Yes, he come back again,
We've got Hayley Atwell as Peggy, John Slattery as Howard Stark.
Yes.
We've got Chris Hemsworth, as we mentioned earlier. Sebastian Stan, again, who we mentioned earlier. We've got Kurt Russell, which I'm going to pick this up now. Michael Douglas and Kurt Russell's old man voice on younger bodies is very strange. It doesn't work very well, in my opinion. I think they probably should have recast the voice actors on that. And I know it's great that Michael Douglas and Kurt Russell are there. Not what you expect, but it's just a little bit jarring, unfortunately. So... Diving into it, obviously...
Was that Annette Bening in it as well, or did they recast that?
No, I think she recast that. There is one other cameo, and I can't remember who it is, because I've written it down.
Just like her.
Yeah, it's not Annette Bening, unfortunately. Let's have a look, because I did write it down, and I can't read my own writing now. because I squeezed it in. I started writing it and then realized there was another cameo. So it was episode two. So season two. Let's see if they've updated IMDb. So, of course, it's a young version of Peter Quill, so there's no Chris Pratt, unfortunately. Do you know what? It's me being silly. It is Lawrence Fishburne as well.
Oh, yeah.
In this. And he's the only one that works. He kind of, I'm guessing he's done some voice acting work over his career, and he kind of lightened his tone a little bit to make it fit the younger version. Good to see him, though, because I feel like he's been underutilized.
And see that character as well, and see that character go large as well that we talked about in the film.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing I will pick up on this, there's a couple of nice bits. I like the Bucky and Peggy / Howard reunion.
Yeah, that's a nice little scene there where they're talking about the eyes and and if that is him or not, and that he's if he is him, he's not their Bucky anymore. And that's a really nice little exchange that is.
Yeah, and I also like that we get a Black Panther.
Yeah,
in this, I thought that was really good to see T'Challa's dad, T'Chaka, make an appearance. Obviously, we're not going to get a regular Black Panther anymore, unfortunately. But it was nice to see that. We get some nice little Avengers theme nods throughout this as well. So that was good. And there's some Avengers-like visuals throughout this episode as well, which I quite like. It is just a shame that it's a bit of a watered-down team throughout it. I would also say...
I was going to say slightly... No, carry on.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say slightly rehashed finale of the second film as well.
Yeah.
Though I thought the kid, the guy playing Quill, did a really good job. I thought, actually, his voice was really good in it.
Yeah, I struggle with, like, superhero shows that are led by, like, proper kids. Mm. It's a little bit tough sometimes because they're not lead actors at that age a lot of the time. So it's kind of hard. We get Hope as well in this, Hope Van Dyne. So the two of them kind of lead the episode at times, and it is a little bit difficult with them. So moving on, some of the visuals I think are great. The rock version of Ego I thought was really well put together.
Yeah, and the mini versions all swarming over Bill as well. I thought it was great.
Yeah, definitely. I love some of the visuals in this one. I also don't really like that there's no backstory to the team. I know we've had it in live action, but that was, what, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Of that kind of part of this team. I feel like there could have been a little bit more backstory as to why they're all kind of split off, but still kind of working together. And there seems like there's issues between certain people that we aren't privy to. Just, it feels like it could be a little bit more. I like at the end, the cameo of Goose.
Yes.
I thought that was clever. The one thing I am going to pick up on, the weird still of Bucky looking out across New York. Nothing is moving in that picture. It's literally a still, which I thought was, it must have been. It was very strange. But then they reverted back to look at him, and it's back to a moving picture. But the fact that they've got a bridge out in front of him where there's clearly cars on it that just aren't moving.
Yeah. I get the feeling as well from that they've clearly let him loose in that verse so they can have his own episode, maybe in series three or something.
Yeah, definitely. So, moving on right to the end. As we talked about earlier, Hemsworth is definitely still hamming it up. But because, as you say, it's animated, it works better.
Better.
So he's definitely not as goofy as he is in live action.
But also, this version of Thor was a little bit more grown up, I think, though, than some of the other ones we've seen, because of what he's witnessed that Peter Quill had done to his own world. And
yeah, definitely.
That's the one thing I take about the episode. It's quite creepy to see an 8-9-year-old Peter Quill that's got that power braiding across the universe.
Yeah,
destroying worlds.
Which we got a glimpse of, didn't we, in the second Guardians? But that was it. We didn't get a lot of it, and it is that it's incredibly creepy when he walks out of the fog, and his eyes are glowing.
Yes.
Very, very creepy. So that kind of wraps up my thoughts on episode two. I didn't think it was as good as the first.
No,
the first is definitely.
If it had been the opener, it would have been a bit flat, I think. But it has a lot of work to meet the first one. It doesn't quite come up to it. There's some interesting stuff in there, like I mentioned, like the creepy factor and some of the visuals. But bits of it didn't really gel. It's definitely the. And we'll talk about the third one in a minute. For me, it's the weakest of the first three.
Yeah, yeah. So we might as well jump onto the third one. What if Happy Hogan saved Christmas?
And I'll say up front, I fucking love this episode, promise from the off.
And do you know what? It's weird because I've not got many notes. And that's mainly because I don't think it moves the story of What If on.
It's an homage to Die Hard, basically.
Yeah, it is. There's definitely a lot of Die Hard in it, but there's also a tinge of Home Alone as well to it. Because Happy gets left at home to deal with everything.
And again, it's just another cameo fest of characters, and again, some nice returning voices as well, like Darcy.
Yeah, they were surprising. And Maria Hill, I was really surprised that Kobe was back. Certainly after what happened in Secret Invasion, whether it was again contractual because she has worked for Marvel this year, it might well have been part of the negotiations because she isn't in it a lot. It is a couple of quick cameos. Obviously, this episode is led by Johnny Favs. Still can't step away. The first director and one of the first actors to appear in the MCU, still going after 15 years. He's still there. Yeah. He cannot walk away, despite the fact that he's pretty much co-running Lucasfilm. He's still there. Because I hadn't seen whether it was him to start with, and once I realised it was like, yep, yeah, great, he's back. Definitely. as you say, there are a lot of cameos in this. We do get the Avengers, the Avengers team that we know pretty much in this one. We do get a couple of changes. Bruce obviously isn't Hulk in this one and refuses to be. We also get a Wasp. Wasp gets a nice cameo in this one as well. But yeah, the rest of them are really pretty what we expect.
But this is just I love the fact that this basically the episode. This episode also exists to take the piss out of Hawkeye and do it brilliantly as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I was going to say, Tony really can be a douche at any time because he's a proper arse in this episode at times.
They've got like a glitter arrow for Hawkeye's machines, and the fact that like his doll hasn't sold out.
Yeah,
we could even reduce the price on it as well.
Yeah, and he's gone in there and bought the Iron Man one.
He's got to take an Iron Man one home. And the fact that they got Jeremy back as well, didn't they? So and so fair game to him. He just ripped the piss out of his character so badly in this one.
Yeah, and I do want to say I think Favreau's performance as the Hulk is really good, but it's not him that steals the episode. It is Sam Rockwell.
Yeah.
Rockwell is superb in this.
He comes in and just knocks out of the park. He could have easily just come in, read the lines, taken the check or whatever.
Yeah, but for someone that hasn't been in the MCU for, a decade?
Yeah, since the short, wasn't it?
Yeah. He's brilliant in this. Just absolutely steals the show. And the whole thing with the Hulkbuster, when they think that he's the good guy inside the Hulkbuster, and then they realize it's not. that Happy's actually in Hulk mode is brilliant. And then we
it's the fact that Tony just flips a switch and dismantles it.
And he just lands on his feet. That's the worrying thing. What surely if he did that, he'd just land up on his ass. And he doesn't. Yeah. He actually lands on his feet. then we get the new automated system, Werner, which unfortunately wasn't Werner Herzog. He did turn it down. They did offer it to him, having previously worked on Lucasfilm.
Was that Ross Markham by any chance doing that?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah. Because he's got a credit in this.
I just roared at that sequence, though, the fact that he's got Werner Herzog's voice.
Yeah.
And his attitude is brilliant.
Yeah, definitely. And there's some really fun moments as well. The A of the Avengers Tower having a Christmas hat on it.
Yes.
It's brilliant. And we also get a silhouette of the Avengers all in their Christmas outfits.
Yes.
It's brilliant. I didn't have a lot of notes. My last one was there is an article in a magazine that gets picked up that says Science Bros on it, which I thought was really good. They finally got it in there. My final thoughts is it's just a good, fun romp. It doesn't move the needle on the season.
No.
It's great fun.
I love the fact as well that they don't reference Die Hard. They reference characters and actors, but they never reference the title. That scene where Darcy's out getting the cherries, which is brilliant, and then they got the long shot of, again, taken from Die Hard of looking up at the tower. And then she talks about being the Reginald L. Johnson, and he calls him McLean. But they never reference the film itself, which is just a great way of doing it.
No, it's a really fun episode and some great returning characters that I think deserve more, like Sam Rockwell.
For me, this is the episode that the Party Thor one wished it was in the first series.
Yeah, definitely. This is because the Party Thor one seems so far away from what the MCU was, whereas this feels fairly close to what we know.
Yeah.
But is then still also outside the box.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, definitely.
And will probably now become part of my annual Christmas rewatching.
Yeah.
Just because it's a fun Christmas episode.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So that kind of wraps up our thoughts. I think I wouldn't even call it a mixed bag because they were all solid. Even that second one, despite us saying it wasn't our favourite, it was still a solid episode. With some great cameos. And overall, I think it's been fairly strong within these first three episodes. So
I'm watching the rest now. So
We're going to wrap it up here. As I say, first three episodes. We will be back with the second three episodes sometime, probably just at the beginning, probably the end of the year, beginning of the new year. We hopefully will be able to get it out before the new year. But that wraps up our thoughts on What If Season 2, Episodes 1 to 3. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us all year. As always, we're going to keep plugging away with this because we have fun doing it. It's not a chore. We decided to pick things that we enjoyed doing with our podcasts.
Even with the prospect of Craig popping up now and again, we still enjoy doing it.
we try and ignore that. we're still going to be sticking around. Marvel's going to be a little bit busier than we thought they were going to be next year, just with animated stuff in the end. That does wrap up our thoughts on episodes 1 to 3 of What If Season 2, and we will see you some point in the next week or so with our thoughts on episodes 4 to 6.